go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Scott Benjamin.
And I'm Ben Bolin.
And today we're going to talk about Vespa scooters.
Yes, yes, we are.
And I don't know, we've got a strong opinion about this. I think that maybe later we should discuss that, you know, what we think about them in Atlanta traffic.
All right. Yeah, you know what? Fair enough. Let's wait for the end there because that's subjective. So let's keep it just the facts.
Yeah, maybe kind of percolate that in your head there for a little while and think about maybe what you think about scooters in traffic, and we'll get to that later and see if you agree with us.
Yes.
Okay.
So once upon a time, right, mm-hmm. The Vespa's company is, and I hope I'm not butchering this too bad, Piaggio.
Oh, I'm glad you said it, not me.
Okay. Well, Piaggio, all apologies to pronunciation, was founded in Genoa in 1884. By a guy named Rinaldo Piaggio. Get this, Scott. He was 20 years old.
Did you say 1884? That
yes.
is a long, long time ago.
Yes.
I never would have dreamt that this went back that far. Now, I don't think the Vespa itself goes back that far, right? Okay, and that's because you know, you can imagine Italy around, you know, World War II, heavy, heavy damage, right?
Yeah.
And as the story goes, I mean, maybe I'm skipping ahead here a little farther than you wanted to,
right? No, go ahead.
But as the story goes, and, you know, this is kind of a tale that's been around for a long time because I think it matches with other companies, too.
Vespa's competitor, actually.
Yeah, exactly. So the idea is that, you know, here's this factory that, you know, in Italy, war-torn Italy, just after World War II.
Right.
And it's in shambles. There are places that are difficult to get to. You got to walk long distances to get them. They need a small vehicle in order to get to the other end of the factory. And that's the charming little tale that says, well, let's develop this scooter to get around, right?
Yes. And as with many charming tales, there are some questions about the authenticity, but it's a great story.
Yeah, because it matches exactly their competitor's story of why they developed the same type of vehicle, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
So does that... Is that true or not? I don't know, but, you know, it's a charming tale.
And here's what we do know for sure. Vespa was first produced in April of 1946.
Mm-hmm.
So even though it's not 1884, 1946, this is a pretty long time ago now.
Yeah, that's a significant time. We're approaching, 80 years, is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
Coming up on that. And the strange thing about this now, if you know about the Italian language, you would already know this, but Vespa is the Italian word for wasp. Mm-hmm. And it was given to the vehicle in question because when it was shown to the founder of the company,
mm-hmm.
You know, he said develop this little vehicle to get around the shop, supposedly. The first thing he said is, it sounds like a wasp, it looks like a wasp, I'm going to call it a wasp. And that's Vespa.
Yeah.
In Italian. So simple as that. And again, how much of that's true, I'm not exactly sure, but it makes a great story.
And we do know it's true that nowadays Vespas are everywhere. They are virtually on every continent except for Antarctica.
Really?
Well, it's too cold, really.
Oh, yeah. probably a good guess, I would say, Ben.
And technically, Vespa is a brand name, and the actual machine is what we call a scooter.
Yeah, that's right, because there's a difference between mopeds and scooters.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want, I've got a couple of small differences here that we generally recognize as differences between mopeds and scooters. Because when I grew up, it was mopeds mostly. And, of course, there are Vespas around, obviously,
right?
Which were motor scooters. But a lot of kids had mopeds in my neighborhood. And mopeds are typically, if you want to like, kind of draw a dividing line, there's like a 50cc motor size difference or engine size between mopeds and scooters. Anything below 50cc is considered a moped. Anything above 50cc's is considered a motor scooter. Now, there's conflicting information about that in a moment when we talk about, you know, Vespa models today.
Right.
But that's kind of the line that's drawn there. The other thing is that mopeds are typically they have a pedal system. The feet of the rider are out on pedals, and that's the kind I remember from when I was young.
Yeah.
They look more like a bicycle with an engine. Remember the early, early motorcycles that we saw?
Yeah.
Well, these were, you know, much smaller engines, of course, you know, two little tiny two-stroke engines. They could be you could start them with a pedal system, which would pedal really fast, and the engine would start up. Or you could just pedal them like you would a bike, a big, inefficient bike.
It's kind of close to what we would call an electrically assisted bike.
Yeah, exactly. And then
motor assisted.
And then motor scooters, they had no pedal system. So, you know, you rely strictly on the engine itself, the motor itself. And you have like a footwell or kind of like a little pocket in front to protect the rider's feet. They place them up in a forward sitting position.
And there's a little cowl over the...
Exactly. Like a wind or a dirt cowl. It protects you from the elements a little bit, just a little bit. To me, mopeds just simply look more like a bike, I guess, than a motor scooter. Motor scooter looks like maybe a scaled down... I don't even know about a motorcycle now that I think about it, really.
Well, yeah, the pedals, I think, are going to be key for someone who is attempting to differentiate between a moped and a motor scooter and doesn't have the ability to, check out the engine. There's an upper level cutoff for the CC on a scooter. Typically, anything 250cc and under, down to 50cc.
You know, I'm glad you said that because I've seen signs on the highway that state any motor vehicle with, a cc, an engine cc lower than this is not allowed on the freeway or highway, rather.
Yeah.
So that must be a way to differentiate, from motor scooter to motorcycle.
Right.
And say you're not allowed over in this area, even though you're a licensed vehicle for city streets. Not allowed to come onto the highway at, these speeds of 65, 70 miles an hour.
I'm chomping at the bit to talk about the subjective stuff at the end.
Okay.
Let's keep it objective, right?
All right. So basically what we've got is we got a two-wheeled, four-stroke, sometimes two-stroke engine. We don't need to go into the differences of that now. Something between 50 cc's and, let's say, 250, although I'm seeing some of these Vespas are pushing.
Some of them are pushing,
They're pushing a little bit above that. It just seems like it's an easy way to differentiate them with the pedal thing. That's probably the simplest way.
Yeah. The thing about Vespas, which is a phrase we'll probably use a couple of times in this episode, the thing about Vespas is that they have a unique position in the world of motor scooters. You could compare it to maybe an Apple iPod versus another MP3 player. Mm-hmm. Vespas, the form factor makes them easily recognizable, even now that they have licensed out a lot of that stuff.
Yeah. I don't want to say it's like a premium brand, really.
That's a great way to say it.
I think that's probably the way to say it. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, not at all. So advantages, I feel like we have to do due diligence and list some advantages of a scooter or a Vespa. A scooter in general is going to be much less expensive than, obviously, car, but also much less expensive probably than some motorcycles.
Agreed.
Now, a Vespa, as you had said earlier, is more on the premium end of this. Mm-hmm. So I guess I got to ask, because we can set this up, what's the cheapest Vespa, like the cheapest price point?
Oh, you know what? If you want a brand new Vespa, I've got a chart here that compares all of them from Vespa.com. You can go there and check for any country, read this in your own language, and check out this comparison list. That's probably the greatest tool that I found on their website. Compares all models, all makes, and it lets you know the engine size, the max speed, the miles. The price, the low end price for a brand new Vespa right now is about $3,299. So a little over, just a little under $3,300. The high end, Ben, the high end goes up just below $7,000.
Just below $7,000.
$7,000 for a GTV 300 IE model that they have.
I want to point out you can buy a, quality used car for $7,000.
Yes, you can. Yeah. You know what? When we were talking about $7,000, and you may say, like, what? Why would I ever buy a motor scooter for $7,000? Some people buy it for, style. They buy it for efficiency. They buy it for, just a way to get around town. In fact, I've got a short list of why people may buy one.
Right. But, okay.
The top speed on these, Ben, and I may be jumping the gun on this, too.
No, this is great.
The low speed, let's say for the $3,299 model, the low speed is going to be about 39 miles per hour. Okay, so that's maximum speed for the $3,300 model.
And that engine is a what was it again?
That's a 49cc engine.
Okay,
so just under 49.5. So let's call it 50. Right about 50. The largest cc engine, which is 278 cc's. And, the model that I mentioned, it was $7,000. the top speed, Ben, 80 miles per hour.
Which floored me when, because we had talked about this briefly off air, and that blew me away, man, because I'll tell you, honestly, I have never in my life seen a Vespa go that quickly.
I agree. 80 miles per hour. Now, that's really impressive. Mm-hmm. And when you look at a Vespa, it's not, I mean, the Vespa that has the 278cc engine, it's not any bigger. It doesn't look like, I've seen some, you know, scooters on the main roads that are relatively big. They look like a motorcycle.
Right. Yeah.
For most, you know, most purposes. The feet are in the forward position. They're not on spikes on the side. But, for a Vespa to go 80 miles per hour and to look like a Vespa and the same size as a Vespa, mm-hmm. the same one that goes 39 miles per hour, I was blown away. Now, they get great fuel mileage, too.
Yes, that is another advantage of a Vespa. You get great fuel mileage.
Yeah, since I've got this chart out, I mean, I can just say it. I guess obviously the bigger the engine, the lower the fuel economy. But when I talk about low fuel economy, I'm mm-hmm. talking like, you know, the big engine, 80 miles per hour, $7,000. Between 65 and 70 miles per gallon, which is really good.
It's tough to beat that.
That is, that's, I don't know, that's like top end of hybrid cars, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you want to go down to the 49.5cc engine, the smaller one, $3,300 model,
mm-hmm.
you're getting between 85 and 90 miles per gallon.
It's great because the mileage improves.
Exactly, yeah, and I think people will claim that, you know, they get even more than that. You know, it depends on the terrain that they're riding on. If it's all flat, they may get even better if they're able to coast for some distance. So,
yeah.
There's a reason behind these things that people get them. I mean, they get great fuel mileage, they're convenient.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're like a small package, easy to maneuver around in traffic, you can park them easy.
You don't have to worry about the parking space. That can be key because Vespas, you know, are built for the, were originally built for a situation wherein people could not afford cars, both in terms of space as well in terms of pure finance.
Yeah, just being able to buy anything. It was, I think that, you know, when we mentioned that when they were developed back in the 40s, this was like, it was like kind of a way to represent like a comeback, you know, like mm-hmm. they were able to, you know, come through the horrors of war and, you know, be able to afford a vehicle to get around town and to, you know, just go to the market. And, it helped out quite a bit because, you know, it could be a long distance to walk into town to pick up that loaf of bread or whatever you're getting.
Yeah, no kidding.
And, you know, it falls somewhere in between, like, you know, too far to walk, bicycle ride would be okay, but maybe unpleasant.
Sure.
If you had a car, it might be wasteful, you know, to take a mm-hmm. car that distance. So Vespas or motor scooters in general kind of fall into that range. They're like a medium distance type vehicle. And for between $3,300 and, let's say, $7,000 now, you can have a Vespa.
And since we're talking about some of the claims for advantages of Vespas, I found this fairly courageous claim here. It said that if Americans were to switch 10% of their total mileage to motor scooters, we would save about $50 million in gas, $50 million, consume 14 million gallons less of fuel, and reduce CO2 emissions just under 325 million pounds.
Okay, yeah. And if we each took showers only every third day, we would save a lot of water too.
Right. And if we each evolved the ability to fly unaided, then think of all the money we'd save on gas.
Yeah, we would. Airlines would go out of business.
I think what you and I are both trying to say here is that it is rather unrealistic to assume that at least Americans would go for a switch of that nature.
Well, you know, the climate has a lot to do with this because, I mean, I know that if, you know, down here in Atlanta,
mm-hmm.
It seems like it might be a reasonable choice for someone for a short to mid-distance mid-distance trip.
Sure, especially if you live downtown and you're trying to go to a grocery store that's like 2 miles away.
Okay, I'll buy that. But let's say that you're up north and it's snowing and sleeting
mm-hmm.
and it's the middle of winter and you've only got this Vespa in the garage. Likely you're going to walk versus take that Vespa. Or, you know, of course, you have a car, you're going to take that. But
mm-hmm.
if your choice is ride a two-wheeled vehicle that has no traction in the snow and ice, or if you're going to, you know, or walk, I would choose walk at that point. Obviously, the better choice would be a vehicle. But if that's your two choices, you know, at that point, you're going to walk. All right, so I guess there's a few different things that Vespas are for different people, I guess, since we're talking about all these differences, really. I mean, you mentioned that they're a cheaper alternative to a motorcycle or car.
Mm-hmm.
They're good for A to B transportation, you know, just short to mid distances. But to a lot of people, and, you know, to people that, like, we mentioned they were developed in the 40s. Well, by the 1960s, the British teens had caught on to the craze, and they decided that, you know, this was a kind of a cool style thing for them to be able to ride around on a scooter and be kind of part of this new, I don't know. I mean, I don't even know how to describe this, Ben. It was like a new fashion, right?
Yeah. It's almost like a, I don't know if I'm getting my subcultures correct, but it was a very big thing with the British mod crowd.
Yeah, that's right. Kind of like picture like the hipsters today, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of them have vehicles like this. Now they're collectors' items. They're hobby items. There's even like racing series that use Vespas. And you know, now that I see that, you know, I kind of laughed at this. I chuckled a little bit, like racing Vespas. I'm thinking, you know, these little putt-putt vehicles that I see around town, no way.
Right.
But if you watch, you know, check out some YouTube videos, there's some tuners that will take a Vespa and make it really, really fast. I mean, 80 miles per hour is fast.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine taking that and going beyond that, or taking a smaller engine and making it go up to 80 miles an hour. I mean, that's even lighter weight, and, you know, it's just a very competitive series that races Vespas.
Absolutely. And I'm so glad that you mentioned the point about the style, the allure of the aesthetics, the allure of the history. In a lot of ways, you could consider the same classic car motivation. Like, some people want to have a Vespa because it seems to them as though it is a classic. You know, it's almost like having a beautiful car from the 50s. And, you know, there's no accounting for taste. I respect that. I do admit that these are well-designed vehicles for what they are. Another thing that's interesting that we have in our article on the website is there's a mention of, you know, they've got small wheels, Vespas.
Sure.
Like 8 to 12 inches.
Okay.
And one of the things that's neat about this is it's always been very important to the company that the tires would be something the rider could replace or the owner could replace.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting, isn't it? That, you know, you can do a roadside repair relatively quickly on this type of vehicle. And oftentimes, you know, a Vespa will carry its own spare.
Yes.
You'll see a spare tire attached to the back of this on, you know, like a small luggage rack or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting that, you know, they had the forethought to think about this. You know, instead of like on a motorcycle where it's position between a couple of forks, you know, it's a more difficult tire to change. You can do it, obviously,
right?
But this is a really quick on off quick switch that can be done, and I think that, you know, that plays into the idea that this was kind of an easy mode of transportation for the masses at one point. You know,
yeah, definitely.
And go ahead.
Okay, so also we should point out that one thing the Vespa has that is different is that the body that you see is the frame of the vehicle, right? And so it's all made out of pressed steel. This kind of frame is called a monocoque frame, and this advantage is apparent when you're talking about rigidity and strength, especially in comparison to weight. Now, Vespas don't weigh very much at all, so it's, you know, I'm sure there were a couple of listeners who heard us express our surprise at the 80 mile per hour limit, right?
Sure.
And one of the questions for more cautious drivers would be, who, for Pete's sake, would go 80 miles an hour on a thing designed this way?
Mm-hmm.
But with some of those safety concerns, there's a great point. But we also need to point out that the Vespa does have a unique frame, and it is probably not as fragile as some people might think.
Yeah, it does have an appearance of being fragile, but you're right. I mean, with the bodywork, and that's kind of an unusual thing too about Vespas, is they've got this really, I don't know, flowing bodywork design.
Yeah.
And it still looks like the original Vespa in a way.
Mm-hmm.
You could look at a new Vespa and think that it has classic lines to it. That monocoque design, I know that was designed, there was somebody who I think had worked on aircraft, is that right?
Right, yes.
So it makes sense that this is the way that he would design it. And, you know, now that I think about it, doesn't the smart vehicle, I don't have the name of it, it's like the Tritium Safety Cell or something like that, the smart vehicle, part of the body that you see on the outside of the car is the frame.
Yes,
and
yes.
That's what makes it strong. And there's a recent commercial that has a truck sitting on top of the frame of the vehicle. It's a very well done commercial because it shows you just how strong it is. But that idea is not brand new.
No, it's not. It's not brand new. It's fairly safe to say that it was popularized, however, by the Vespa.
And the other thing is that the bodywork, it plays another purpose and has another purpose, and that is, of course, to keep the rider protected mm-hmm. in the front, because you know they've got that front cowl, I guess, that keeps your clothes clean, you know, from things flying up on you from the road.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it just a little bit quieter because the engine could be encased, mm-hmm. Engine and transmission can be encased below the seat.
Not to interrupt.
Yeah, sure.
The transmission. We should talk about that.
You know what? I do want to talk about the transmission. Can I just quickly
mention
the engine
and then I'll get to
the transmission? Because no problem, because I want to get there, because that's maybe the most interesting part of this whole thing is the transmission, I think.
Oh,
I
build up to it.
I had no idea. For the engine, we're talking about like maybe some have two stroke, some have four stroke, and you'd be surprised some of the new ones have two stroke engines.
Yeah.
I didn't think that would be the case, but it is. A lot of them have Kickstarters. Mm-hmm. It's real, real simple. I mean, you can see some charts laid out that show you exactly how the engine's laid out with a transmission shaft, a lay shaft in between the crankshaft. It's really, really simple. It's just simple when you watch it operate. And there are a lot of videos out there, or a lot of diagrams and charts that'll show you exactly how that's all laid out and how that works. Not very difficult to get that, the Christmas tree gears between the two.
Mm-hmm.
But some models have what they call twist and go.
Yes, yeah, the twist and go scooters. those are the modern Vespas, and that's because, am I stealing your thunder?
No.
The transmission is continuously variable automatic.
Isn't that cool? So the twist and go scooters are automatic scooters. So all you do is twist the handle and you go.
Yeah, that's it. You twist the throttle to accelerate.
I was confused by this because I didn't know much about Vespas. When I first saw the left handle on an old Vespa, an antique Vespa,
mm-hmm.
I thought that was maybe twist and go because you grab the clutch and twist it and you select a gear based on some numbers that are etched into the metal on the arm. And you select a gear, push the clutch, select first, second, third, mm-hmm. whatever the gearing is. And
then the right handlebar was the throttle.
Exactly, yeah. And they've given way to now these automatic transmissions, these twist-and-go transmissions, are on some models, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a CVT, and it's very, very similar to the one that you would find in a car. But the cool thing about this, Ben, is you can go online and you can look at people who have torn the cover off of mm-hmm. the CVT, and you can watch it in action. They put it up on a milk crate or whatever, and they spin it up and let you see how this thing operates. And that's so cool because, I'd seen that in service training because we had, like a hand crank type, tool
right,
that we could
yeah.
show other technicians to show how it worked. But most people don't get to see one in action, one really happening. So to be able to do this on a Vespa, with just the tools you have in your garage, this is really, really neat.
Yeah, this is nuts. And also just hats off to the Vespa engineers in the first place, because I was surprised by CVT. I don't know if it's the size, but in the course of our preparation for this podcast, I found myself continually presently pleasantly surprised by the Vespa.
See your CPS when you're reading about CVT.
What is CPS?
Continuously
surprised.
Well, I forgot what you said.
Continuously pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, pleasantly surprised. That's right. Anyways, weak attempt at humor, but let's move on. So,
what are people going to see if they check out the video of this in action?
Oh, they're going to see two pulleys, basically. I'll just give you it real simple because I've got all the parts laid out here and all these, arrows and things. You can see my notes. They're a mess.
We have to start posting photographs of your notes, man.
You probably should. It would make things easier if people could follow along at home. but there's a stationary side to each one of these pulleys, and there's a side that's in motion. And in between the two is a belt, and the belt rides up and down on a cone shape, I guess. I guess that's the best way to say it.
Yeah.
And honestly, to watch one of these videos is maybe the best way to do this, to see how this thing moves up and down. But it's continuously changing the ratios, the drive ratios, as the speed increases or decreases. So the thing about this is that it's got fixed plates, it's got movable plates, it's got this belt that rides up and down. It's built for optimal efficiency. It keeps the engine operating in like its optimal RPM range. Final drive range.
Mm-hmm.
And it keeps everything exactly the way it should be without you really having to think about it. You don't need to shift into gear. You don't need to say, I'm going to slow down. I need to get down into first.
Right.
It's like they say, twist and go. You don't have to think about it. It's great on fuel economy. That's why some of these vehicles get, 85, 90 miles per gallon.
Yeah.
That's which is pretty incredible. And maybe the biggest surprise here, Ben, to me, was that the system uses a rubber belt instead of a metal belt. Because in cars, they use a metal belt. It's almost like a really densely linked chain.
Yeah, it's almost like chain link.
Exactly, yeah. It's for wear, obviously, because you don't want to have to get in there all the time and replace it. Well, on a scooter, it's much easier to access the belt, and it's easier to change this thing out. And it's kind of a routine maintenance item. So this rubber belt surprised me.
Because it's a consumable.
Exactly, yeah, it wears, and you have to replace it. And the strange thing about it is that it wears on the sides. Mm-hmm. So it will become thinner. So a new belt is thicker width-wise than a older belt or used belt, which is worn out on the edges because of the way it rides up and down on these pulleys.
Yeah.
So when you buy a belt, you'll have there are three numbers on the belt. They'll have like a length, width, and an angle on the belt. And you have to get the right one.
Right.
But the way you know your belt is worn is if you measure the width. And the width is the middle number. So like let's say the belt is supposed to be 18 millimeters wide. Like a belt may say 645, 1830.
Okay.
That's 645 millimeters in length, which you don't really need to know other than buying a new part. 18 millimeters in width. That's on the top edge if you were to put a ruler across that. And then the angle, which is the angle of the underside of the belt. You don't really need to worry about that either as long as you get the right one for your vehicle. The width, if it's supposed to be 18 millimeters wide and it says it right on the belt and you measure yours and it's 15, that means you got to get a new belt.
It's time to get a new one.
Yeah, if it's maybe 17, I'd wait a little bit maybe, but not long. But, there's an interesting thing about the service about this thing because I just would never think that, I could service my own CVT at home. It's got a rubber belt. It's a complex part of the machine, and yet you're able to do it yourself.
Which is, again, another one of the things that I found myself in CPS, continually pleasantly surprised about the design of Vespas and the way in which the manufacturer emphasized the DIY repairs.
Yeah.
I think that's really cool. There's some other weird Vespa facts I wanted to tell you.
I'd love to hear them.
Did you ever hear about the Vespa 400?
No, I did not.
It's a car.
Really?
Yes. The Vespa 400, tiny passenger car. It had 2- and 4-seater versions. Top speed. Ready?
I'm ready.
55 miles per hour.
Not bad.
It's at 18 horsepower.
Okay.
This was in 1957, by the way. The engine, just under 350 cc's. And I thought it was weird because, you never think of Vespas in association with cars.
Sorry, I'm writing that down. That's why I'm Vespa 400 from 1957. I'm going to look that up.
Yes, sir.
That sounds like something I would be interested in, maybe. That mini and micro car museum that we have here in town. I wonder if they have any there.
Some people also, Scott, did the Paris-Dakar rally in Vespas.
No way.
Yes way.
That seems near impossible.
I feel like we're on Bill and Ted.
Yeah. No, I just don't I can't imagine that happening, but apparently it did.
Well, yeah. they reached the finishing line. They didn't get first.
Yeah.
You know what I
mean?
Yeah,
I can imagine. Yeah.
So, there was one other cool one. Yes. For people who want to visit our website and learn more about Vespas, you can check out our article on Vespas where you can learn about the three-wheeled Vespa.
Not bad.
The Ape. A
little more. Oh, the Ape. I can't believe I didn't even mention the Ape, but go ahead.
Okay, well, Scott, you and I have learned it a little bit of Italian for this podcast.
Oh, yeah, lots.
So Ape stands for B, or is the Italian word for B. And this is a three-wheeled vehicle that's more of a utility vehicle. Now, if you live in the United States, Western Europe, odds are your Ape sightings are going to be few and far between. However, if you were in Southeast Asia or the Pacific Rim in general, you're going to see these much more frequently.
Yeah, they mentioned that a lot of returning soldiers would say that, you know, they have memories of the streets just swarming with these apes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, swarming with bees. How do you like that?
Nice.
I didn't even attend that. But yeah, I guess it's a common vehicle used for taxis, right?
Mm-hmm.
Personal transportation, obviously,
yeah.
Carrying goods to and from markets. You'll see these just stacked with unbelievable amounts of goods, hauling them through the streets. You know, it's like the
crate on crate stacked like Jenga or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, the comical photos that you'll see of people like, I can't mm-hmm. believe they're carrying all this on that little vehicle. Yeah, but they said servicemen returning have, well, good or bad memories, I guess, of seeing lots of these in the streets.
Yeah, and continues today. Now, you're more likely to see a whole bunch of knockoffs of the original design.
Okay.
Some licensed, others not so much. But the point being that the Vespa is, as a company, it's doing well in terms of just models that are around.
Yeah, good, good. And, you know, I've kind of scouring some of the Craigslist listings recently,
yeah.
Because I got interested in this stuff while we were reading about them. And they run the price range, I'll tell you that, from, I think the cheapest one I saw was a $600 model that was kind of beat up but still
mm-hmm.
ran. Looked really cool because it was an antique, of course.
Yeah.
But again, you're still talking $600 for a scooter that, you know, I don't even think it had a seat on it.
Yeah. I was going to say it probably needs work.
Up to, you know, the current prices, which is about $7,000.
Mm-hmm.
You might see them listed used for about $6,000.
Right.
So anything in between as well. And, I'm kind of drawn more towards the antique models, I guess. But again, $600, I don't know, because you can get, you know, a 250cc scooter from another company for about, $500 or something like that. Maybe,
yeah.
Maybe $1,000. Let's say $1,000.
Hence my comparison with Apple again. Because
exactly.
There is definitely a premium there.
Yeah, exactly. There's the name recognition. You know, there's the general style. There's the history that goes along with these things. You know, it's just, I don't know, I think it's worth it maybe to buy the original in some cases.
You know, I got pretty close to buying a Vespa about 3 years ago, not for myself.
Really?
For my my girlfriend.
I had no idea.
She really wanted one, man.
Was it pink?
No.
No?
It remained hypothetical.
Okay.
Luckily, because at this point in time, she had a pretty good case because the Vespa that she wanted. First, it had to be a Vespa.
Mm-hmm.
No knockoffs, exactly. And secondly, the appeal was that at the time, this would be something that she could drive both to work and to school where she was studying.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I said no. This is kind of my segue into our subjective part. I said no because I thought that for the money, there had to be some other alternative, and I was also just enormously skeptical.
Well, you're probably concerned about her safety, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because, you know, it's not the 9 times out of 10 that someone doesn't hit you. It's the 1 time they do.
Sure.
And so I don't want to, you know, I don't want to get myself in too much trouble telling this story.
That's okay.
But I do want to use that as a way to segue into our more subjective part, which to our credit, we've partitioned from the rest of the podcast. So to recap so far, we talked about the history of the Vespa, some of the impressive mechanics inside of it, mechanical components, and we've talked about some of the advantages or the situations in which maybe a driver should consider a Vespa.
Exactly.
So let's talk about when you shouldn't consider a Vespa or where you shouldn't take it.
You know, this is a tricky bit here because, you know, my drive-in, I only drive in about 16 miles from the suburbs into the downtown area, and it takes me a long time, Ben. Traffic is intense. It's, I mean, I'm talking like an hour, maybe even longer, both ways. Sometimes in the evening, it's an hour and a half to get home.
Which is rough.
For a 16-mile trip.
Yeah.
Come on. That's a long time just sitting in your car going nowhere. The problem is that once you do start going somewhere, and the region around here has a lot of hills.
Yes, absolutely.
So, you know, we're in the foothills of, you know, we're kind of northern Georgia, but a little bit further south. Anyways, in traffic, you'll find that there are pretty big hills around here. this is where invariably I will get stuck behind a scooter that is chugging up the hill, trying to go as fast. It's going about 17 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to be maxed out because, you know, the person is usually bent down, trying to be very aerodynamic, you know, with their helmet down.
Sure.
17 miles an hour, maybe at the most, and that just leads to backups behind them and people trying to pass, and maybe, you know, perhaps, I haven't seen it yet, but maybe even an accident, you know, trying to get around this person.
Right. Because in traffic, that kind of stuff has an enormous ripple effect.
Exactly. And, you know, honestly, like, I'm nervous about, you know, kind of sharing the lane with them, you know, like not quite getting all the way over to get around them. And I don't think that's right to do to them either because, you know, they're legally allowed to be out there. But
yeah.
I got a problem with someone that's on a road that's, you know, a speed limit of 45 and they're going 17.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. That can definitely be a pain in heavy traffic because now anyone who lives in a high car density area, you know, like Los Angeles or even Atlanta, knows that people get a little bit crazy during both periods of rush hour, right?
Sure.
And I always try to be enormously considerate and cautious around bicycles, motorcycles, and motor scooters, all three of which are on the surface streets of Atlanta proper. And the one thing that I will say is that it can be dangerous now most of the time. Most of the time, the people who pose the danger are not the people on those two-wheeled vehicles. They're the people in the cars that are maybe in a hurry because they don't want to miss the light, or maybe they're just irritated, or they're on their phone.
Just not paying attention.
Not paying attention, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And my only personal beef with Vespas has nothing to do with the drivers. It's just that I can't justify right now purchasing one of those if I can only use it in a limited way. I mean, I'm going to go ahead and say it, and I don't want to offend anybody, but like many other vehicles, a Vespa is sort of a Goldilocks vehicle. There are situations where it's not right. There are situations where it's not optimal. And then there's a range in there, depending on where you live and what you're doing, where it's just right.
You know what? I completely agree with you. I think that in neighborhoods, like let's say that you want to go from your house over to the clubhouse where there's the swimming pool and the tennis courts and all that, fantastic use of one of those.
Great.
You live in a golf cart community where typically, you know, most of the traffic is going to be golf cart traffic or people on bikes, people walking,
sure,
people on scooters, other people on scooters. I think that's a great idea. You know, they have great, you know, long distances to travel because those are generally sprawling communities.
Yeah.
And you got a decent amount of distance to travel. Usually there's a market nearby, something like that. No problem at all. You may even have to cross the main street to get to the other side of the road, you know, where the rest of the golf course community is, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect use for that. High density areas, I don't know. I'm not convinced that that's the way to do it. Now, they even say, a lot of people say, like, people on farms even use them, you know, to get to the, out to the barn or the other side of the pasture or whatever.
Sure, yeah.
I think that's not bad. You know, maybe a rural community where, you know, there's a lot of times when, you know, there's just no one on the road except for you.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's a good time to do it. But I can't see it being used or being useful in heavy, heavy traffic like that. I just don't understand the comfort. I don't have the comfort level to be around them, I don't think.
Yeah, and to play devil's advocate here, I will go ahead and point out that when we're talking about drivers for whom the Vespa works, that thing really works well. I mean, Vespa drivers are loyal people.
Definitely.
They're up there with, they're up there with the muscle car crowd.
Ben, I've said it myself. I'd like to have one. I know that I wouldn't drive it into work. I would use it in, you know, situations where I know that I'm not going to be around any or very little traffic. That's the only time I would use it. And when I was around, almost by myself, really.
Yeah, but we want to buy one of every vehicle.
I think, yeah, that's the problem. Do you have any experience with a moped yourself? Do you ever own a moped or mini bike or anything like that?
So remember earlier when we did the pedal cars episode and I told you about those people who would let me ride their pedal car?
Yeah,
they had a moped.
Okay. I had a friend with a moped, too, and I desperately wanted a moped, a pedal type.
Yeah.
I had a friend who had a, I guess it was a motor scooter. It was, do you remember the Honda Spree?
Are you serious?
It was when the Honda Spree first came out, and I actually had a bad experience on it because I went to turn, you know, this neighborhood turned too sharp, and I was on gravel and dumped it.
Yeah.
And I got, you know, scarred up a little bit with the gravel and everything, and I just never really had much interest in it after that.
You got burned.
Yeah, I did. I did. A little road rash from it, from a, from a Honda Spree, but it was early, you know, like I'd say like early, you know, late 80s when I was using this. So I know they've gotten much better.
I'm going to make
it. Doesn't improve the driver, though.
Don't beat yourself up, man. I'm going to make a prediction. I think we're both, we've got our Vespa stuff done, right? So I want to make one prediction.
What's that?
I believe that we will see more Vespas in the future, perhaps even more just motor scooters of similar design, because with the inevitable rise in the price of fossil fuels, right, and the need for or the inevitable rise of fossil fuels, pardon me, and the fact that more and more people across the world are living in urban environments where it would be difficult to find A or afford B, a spot to park a car. So I think that Vespas are going are set to rise. I think it's a rising star.
I agree with you, but I'll throw in the asterisk with the climate. I think the climate will have a lot to do with that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, because of the much smaller emissions amount, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think I think you're exactly right. I think that, you know, when people can, you know, get a vehicle that, that achieves 85 to 90 miles per gallon or more, I think that the choice is simple there.
That's true. That's one thing we have noticed in our crazy podcasting partnership. We have noticed that the numbers tend to be the trump card.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And to wrap up, if you want, I've got two listener mails.
Sounds good.
All right. This one I'm happy to say, Scott, is something that we can say we're already addressing. Renard writes to us and says, more episodes on motorcycles. Says, I would love to hear more episodes on motorcycles. I've heard the episode on the history of Harley-Davidson. A good start might be Eric Buell and all he's done. I ride sports bikes, so I love hearing good details. That's from Renard in Chicago.
My brother drives a Buell, so maybe we can get some info from him on this. Yeah. But you know, we're always looking for new topics, and motorcycles, that's one thing that we try to get into our rotation. So we got scooters today. Maybe next time we'll have motorcycles. Sounds good.
And the last one here, John writes to us from Golden, British Columbia, and he says, greetings, Ben and Scott. I've never been to an auto event at Nürburgring, but I have traveled there for the last 4 years from British Columbia to go there with some European friends for a three-day music festival. The lineups have always been amazing, and I have my tickets booked for the festival in 2013. It's a beautiful venue and is always one of the highlights of my year. Keep up the good work. And then he gives us a link and he says, check out these lineups. This is the a yearly music festival held.
Music festival, no racing. 4 years in a row, no racing. You think you'd get on there at least for, you know, like the public days when you can go out and drive, you know, or just ride a tour bus across it or something.
Yeah, yeah, especially after making a long trip.
You know, he's right, though. It must be really cool just to see it because of the history involved. And it's supposed to be a beautiful track. I mean, just beautiful, the surroundings and everything about it. It's supposed to be really, really nice.
One day, man, we're going to go there. But in the meanwhile, we hope everybody enjoyed our episode on the Vespas. What do you want to hear more about? Write a letter to us, drop a line on Facebook, give us a holler on Twitter, or write an email to us directly at
carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.